Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up over the next half hour, the Earth Summit 20 years on. We look ahead to the upcoming Rio de Janeiro Summit to see what's at stake. And as the Seventh World Meeting for Families prepares to kick off in Milan, we focus on the family with their nobody's children, yet everyone's, caring for the smallest victims of HIV/AIDS in Cambodia, and sustaining children through prayer, linking moms together in an international prayer chain. At the end of June, world leaders, along with thousands of participants from governments, the private sector, NGOs, and other groups, will be coming together in Rio de Janeiro to shape policy on how to reduce poverty, advance social equity, and ensure environmental protection. The summit is taking place 20 years after the original Rio Earth Summit, which took place in 1992. Well, Sarah Wykes, the lead analyst on environment and climate change for the Catholic aid agency CAFOD, says she thinks it's an important event and an important opportunity to try and put poverty reduction and poor people's livelihood at the center of the debate about green development. She spoke to Chris Wells about the agency's expectations and hopes ahead of the international gathering.
I think groups like us and our partners, our kind of expectations were quite low to start with, and they haven't necessarily got any higher. And there seems to have been a lot of dispute in the negotiations, and it's not clear what language will actually make it through to the final negotiating text. As you probably know, the text has ballooned to hundreds of pages, and there's now an attempt to cut it back down again. So it's not clear what actual decisions will come out, and there are different noises coming from different governments. So there are two overarching themes. One is the green economy, and the other is the institutional framework for the post-MDGs, so where there will be new development goals developed after 2015. I mean, I think everybody's waiting, has a kind of wait-and-see approach to see what actually comes out in the final political declaration.
Now, does CAFOD and its partners have some specific points that you want to bring up at this conference?
We have some concerns about the use of the term green economy. We basically think that within that discussion, we would like to see very much a recognition and a focus on developing countries and the fact that developing countries have different specific needs in terms of greening their economies. They're different to developed economies, obviously. And we definitely think that the idea that green growth is good in itself, that any growth is good, is perhaps the wrong message. We definitely want to focus on promoting the right kinds of growth that will lead to more inclusion of poor people. We're basically saying we need to support appropriate types of growth, whereas you might say growth in renewables technology, the kind of low-cost technology that can help poor people in rural areas access energy, that would be desirable, whereas perhaps increasing growth in short-haul air travel for leisure, those kind of luxury activities, perhaps is less desirable. So policymakers basically need to have the target growth that would achieve real progress for the kind of partners that we work in terms of poverty reduction. Putting poor people at the heart of greening economies, I guess, is our message. And that also using measures like GDP in itself to measure well-being is really redundant now, and that we need to move beyond GDP and have much more sophisticated ways of measuring whether societies are becoming more equal, for example, whether poor people are being more included. So that would be our message on green growth. On the post-MDG framework, again, we think Rio is a real opportunity to put sustainable development and sustainability at the heart of poverty reduction. But we think there needs to be basically a transparent, inclusive process to work out what framework and what any goals would be post-2015. So we're not actually necessarily in favour of specific sustainable development goals coming out of Rio. We would like to see any discussion around specific sustainable development goals basically being integrated into the post-MDG discussion that's starting now, so that we don't have two parallel processes. And obviously, for us, making sure that there's meaningful consultation and meaningful engagement with civil society, particularly in the South, with our partners, so they can really engage and be at the heart of that discussion. We think that's absolutely key. And then I guess, finally, there is one initiative that we hope will be supported politically coming out of Rio, which is the Ban Ki-moon Sustainable Energy for All initiative, which has the goal of universal access to modern energy services by 2030. and also has goals around increasing the amount of renewables in the energy mix and increasing energy efficiency. This is a personal initiative of Ban Ki-moon, who set up a high-level panel, and we're hoping that there will be at least political support given to the goals of that initiative at the Rio conference.
The original climate change conference in Rio in 1992 was a UN conference on environment and development. This year's conference is a conference on sustainable development. Can you just explain what is the significance of that change from just plain development to sustainable development? What do we mean by that, and what does that mean for going forward?
Unless we address this issue of living within these planetary boundaries, so obviously one huge challenge we have is a changing climate, which is being caused mainly by use of fossil fuels in industrialized countries and emerging economies. But unless we really make sure that economic development, social development happens while respecting those environmental boundaries, then basically we're not going to be able to move forward. So it's having this three pillars of sustainable development. So it's looking not just at economic development, but human development and the environment, and really treating those equally. So I guess that particularly with all the growing environmental threats that we have, like climate change and other environmental threats, there's a recognition that we're not going to get development unless we actually respect ecosystems.
Sarah Wykes is the lead analyst on environment and climate change for CAFOD. They are nobody's children, and yet they are everyone's. They are the some 240 HIV/AIDS children in Our Village, a Catholic-run orphanage in a rural village in Kampong Spao province, Cambodia. A U.S.-based charity, New Hope for Cambodian Children, or NHCC, opened the 18-acre complex in 2006 to care for children from the ages of 2 to 18 affected with HIV/AIDS. The children are just a handful of the some 7,000 kids and 63,000 adults living with HIV and AIDS in the Southeast Asian country. But the charity provides social support to some 1,400 infected children and their affected families living across Cambodia and the capital, Phnom Penh. In Our Village, the kids live in groups of 10 in houses with couples who become their moms and dads, who feed them, ensure they get proper schooling and medication, and most of all, love.
The children in my orphanage, that means we teach the children how to feel like a family again.
I ask Manny Pock, the deputy director of the NGO, if her job isn't a sad one, dealing with sick children, some dying, and orphans of parents who have died from AIDS. But hers was a story of joy.
I still remember one day that one child that came, I met him in the hospital with the grandma, and then the grandma said, okay.
Manny Pock remembers the day she met this HIV-infected child whose heart disease landed him in hospital. He was with his grandmother, who said she didn't want him anymore, and she was going to just leave him there. So Manny took him into Our Village and to doctors who kept turning the boy down for surgery, until finally, thanks to a miracle from Jesus, she says, she found one willing to do the operation. And today he runs and plays ball with the other boys and is doing great. Enveloped in so much love, children like him, she says, are resurrected.
He's happy and can play like the other boy, the other children.
But Manny's wide smile fades as she tells me that often when parents die of AIDS, the HIV-positive children are left to an uncle or other relative to raise, but they don't want the responsibility, so they give the child to her orphanage. Other orphanages will not accept children with HIV. The children, she says, then feel abandoned and betrayed.
So the children in my orphanage, that means we teach the children how to feel like a family again. So we build a house, like, and we provide the nanny, the couple, like their parent again. So we want them to be warm with us, like a family. So another life.
When I work with children, in the beginning we could not afford the medicine for HIV therapy, no? So they were just dying and dying and dying. It was like crying and crying and crying all the time.
Italian Paola Maiocchi gave up her job as a nurse to go work among the poor and sick in Cambodia in 2001. She helped set up the Pastoral Health Care Committee for the Vicariate of Phnom Penh. Our Village is one of her pet projects, but her office runs two other shelters for the sick in Phnom Penh, which sometimes become a hospice for a night or two, for beggars with nowhere else to go.
You feel the heart of a mother to these hundreds of children. You cannot believe, and don't believe it, you can really not, but you love them, each one of them, just your own son or daughter. It's amazing because they just need you and you need them somehow. So the care, the worry is still there. But the joy is something. Whenever they are getting better, they smile, they say something like gratitude, or they get the meaning of life. They are 4, 5, 6, 7 years old and they know what life is, what love is, what mercy is, what resurrection. They are resurrected to a new life. What does it mean for them is clear now. So they are teaching us what we could not learn from anybody else if we had not the great honor to work in this field for the poor one, for the children with AIDS, and with a very small country like Cambodia is, that is really struggling to get better and better also about this. We had this kind of a big change a few years ago, 2005, yeah, when the drug were sponsored by a big association, big foundation like Clinton Foundation, you know, big sponsorship about this. Because anyway, it's a business and we cannot deny that. No? So they start to sponsor like for international, no? So both for the adults and children. No? So we are not anymore worried about how to get drugs, no? Because it's a governmental duty now through big association and big foundations. But we are the one to care that each one of the children or our client or our sick, no? Actually get the medicine correctly, they actually taking, they are not having side effect, or because that's something that the public system cannot do actually very well, no? So they still need people to look after, and as Mani said, these people are broken people now because the life has been such a miserable since they got AIDS. So the idea is, beside medicine and drugs, is to build up the life again together. No, so it's much more like build up families, caring, love. Yeah, you got your chance now in the society now. Our small children, when we started 10 years ago, they were dying, they were so miserable. And now one this year, among others, but this one is very amazing because he will start to study medicine, for instance. So it will be like nobody within classroom will know that he is a sick, he's a survivor from AIDS, and he's very determined and he wants to become a doctor, also to be even more caring for these people living with AIDS.
Paola explains the pastoral committee also offers scholarships to young Catholics who want to study medicine, and runs medical support services in rural areas to help patients reach hospitals and consult with doctors.
So you've given up your home here in Italy to live and help the poorest of the poor and the forgotten in Cambodia. Is that where you plan on spending the rest of your life?
I really hope so. If the health is still okay, if no big things happen. Yeah, this is it's a choice for life, yes. But anyway, I did give up my house in Italy, but I found houses, many houses and families and children and brothers and sisters there that are... you remember Jesus said you get the 100 times, yeah. That's right, 1,000 times.
Cambodia's 20,000 Catholics are sometimes the object of prejudice in the majority Buddhist country, Paola observes. But through their humble acts of charity, Cambodia's Catholics are winning over hearts and minds.
In a country like Cambodia, where there is like prejudice towards the Christians, because they are a very Buddhist country, and Christian like, You are a traitor of your own country. No? If you become Christian, like you are really acting bad, no? Towards your father and mother and family and whatever. No? But seeing the charity of the Christians to well, whoever, not just Christian to Christian, but to whoever is in need, they are actually much, you know, amazed. No? I said, so you don't want us to become Christian? I said, no, I want to care for you because you are in need, and I will just care for you, and that's it. And they are amazed about this now. So whatever is a prejudice, whatever is a misunderstanding about being Christians, it disappeared. Especially in place of God, which is our hospitals, a place for care for sick, sick shelters. People are just amazed. I mean, the spirituality of the Christian is charity, is being with the one in need. And no matter what, and you have not to change your belief at all.
Whenever anyone asks to become Christian, Paola reflects, they have been evangelized through an act of charity.
But whenever they ask to become Christian because of being evangelized by a charity act, it's a pure act of, you know, they want just to become the same family as the charity they saw, no, but the act of some Christians, no, towards them, no. So in this more church charity, especially the care for the sick, for the orphans, for the least of the society, it's really what is affecting more the society there. Now, say, my goodness, they are losing time and money for the one they are going to die anyway. They are so weak. Yeah, we are doing that. We are losing money, time, and energy for them. And so what? And they are amazed about this.
And then Paola recounts the story of a famous Cambodian doctor friend who reflected with her on the spiritual richness of charity.
One doctor, a friend of mine, is a Buddhist, he's a big doctor in Cambodia. He told me, you know, we as a Buddhist, we collect money to build up golden pagoda, very rich and high and golden pagoda, no? So we gain merit because of this. But you as a Christian, you collect money to help bodies of people, sick and infirm and weak. And he said, I think this is the best way to get merit, in according to his belief, by saying that this is the way to really to praise God, no? Not just building pagoda, no. So he was somehow judging himself and seeing something, no, from our just very daily life, caring for the sick.
Paola Maiocchi, with the Pastoral Healthcare Committee for the Vicariate of Phnom Penh, and earlier we heard Manny Pak, the Deputy Director of New Hope for Cambodian Children. For those of us who are mothers, how many times have we despaired of the behavior of our children? Those on drugs, those who talk back and rebel against us, those who get constantly into trouble, those who turn their back on God. How many of us have borne the unbearable fears and the excruciating wounds that only a mother can feel for a sick child? It seems sometimes that mothers, like Our Lady, were born not just to love and to protect, but often to grieve over the welfare of their children and family. Often, mothers can feel alone, faced with the immense responsibility of forming the future generations of loving and giving young people in a world fraught with pitfalls and conflict.
Stop your crying and wipe away your tears. All that you have done for your children will not go unrewarded. They will return from the enemy's land. There is hope for your future. Your children will come back home. I, the Lord, have spoken.
Those words from Jeremiah serve to give mothers strength. They've been adopted as a motto by thousands of mothers the world over in a growing interdenominational movement called Mother's Prayers. The movement began in 1995 in Veronica Williams' living room in Kent in southeast England, when she and another Catholic grandmother decided to meet weekly to pray for their children and their children's children. Soon, dozens of other mothers were knocking on Veronica's door, asking to join them too. The movement now covers the globe, with prayer groups in more than 90 countries. They're not just for Catholics. Anglicans, Orthodox, and Protestant mothers form part of the groups too, all united in their prayers for the welfare of their children and world peace. I sat down with Veronica when she recently came to Rome to introduce mothers' prayers to Italian moms. I asked her how the movement came about.
I was involved with some Christians that produced a booklet called What on Earth Are We Doing to Our Children? That listed all the things that were happening in our society that affect our children. And this was produced to take to the House of Lords. I have 9 grandchildren, and when I read this booklet, I knew I had to do something because it was a shocking report.
You are Catholic, right?
I am.
But this has become an interdenominational phenomena because you're present in more than 90 countries by now. What do you attribute all this success to?
I believe that this Mother's Prayers is a special grace that the Lord has given us because there are a lot of pain in mothers' hearts today, not just Catholics, but everyone. And when people hear of something that is being blessed and miracles are happening, they are all quite happy to unite on the things that we all believe in. And the things that maybe are still a bit difficult, we leave those aside for the Holy Spirit to change.
How have you seen it touch your own family?
Well, I know that, first of all, it touches the mother. It keeps the mother more peaceful because the spirituality is that we come to understand that Jesus is calling us to trust him with our children. And therefore, I think the mothers, first of all, change. And then we see wonderful answers to prayers. In my own case, I see a dramatic conversion of my son-in-law, which was nothing short of a miracle.
In what way?
Well, he was an atheist. He found anyone Christian were people that were a bit lacking and they needed something. I think he thought I had nothing better to do. And so he was rather anxious that my daughter didn't become like me. But through prayer, he had a conversion experience. And he now is a Catholic.
How did you grow from 2 people to more than 2 people?
Well, right from the beginning, when we felt the Lord had put this on our hearts through this document, we said, Lord, you be in charge, you be the boss, we be your secretaries. And so what we do is we totally rely on the Lord for these things to happen. So we haven't advertised anything ourselves, but the Lord has done it for us and he's done a wonderful job. Because as you say, it's now in over 90 countries with hundreds and thousands of groups.
You've told me that it's through meeting people, just word of mouth. People have just shown up on your doorstep asking to be part of the group or for more information.
Yeah.
What are some of the stories of these people that you've met that have marked your life?
Well, I just met one woman on a train once. I had been sightseeing in London, and this woman wanted to know if it was the right carriage. And when I said yes, I noticed she had an accent. So I said, oh, were you sightseeing? And she said, no, I'm moving to your area. And she asked us, were we sightseeing? And we said, yes, but we'd been to London before when we took this booklet to the House of Lords. And so we started talking about problems with children. And she said, I don't really know what the answer is. So I felt the Lord saying, ask if she's a Christian. And when I asked her if she was a Christian, she said yes. And we told her about Mother's Prayers. And she said, now I know why I missed the last train and why I'm sitting in this carriage. The Lord has been speaking to me. I haven't been listening. And I'm going to take Mother's Prayers to Mexico and to Kuwait. So this is so wonderful. There's no way I could have arranged to go to Mexico and to Kuwait, but the Lord can.
Tell me about how these prayer sessions are actually formulated.
Well, a group can be just 2 women. And they don't have to be physical mothers, it's for spiritual mothers too. And we meet together once a week, and we have a little booklet that has very informal prayers. I call them chatty prayers. It's just a mother's heart speaking to Jesus. And they're prayers that prepare our hearts for a moment when the mother will kneel before the cross of Jesus, understanding that he loves her children more than she could possibly love them, and that her children really belong to him, and that he can change things that she can't. And so after we've said these little prayers, we write the names of our children, and one by one we go to the cross and we say, Lord, over to you. These problems are too big for me, but you can change these things. And we place the name of our children at the foot of the cross. It has to be a total surrender, we call it, where we totally trust him. We're not praying as perhaps we did in the past, where we said, Lord, help, you know, when there's a problem. And then when we finished our prayer, start to worry again. I feel the Lord is saying, come to me, all you who labour and are burdened, I will give you rest. And so we go to him with our problems and we leave them there. We don't take them back again. And the children are being blessed because there are miracles happening, like children coming off drugs, children that have been missing from home, coming home, all kinds, children coming back to faith.
Are your prayers exclusively for your own family or for also other people? Can you, quote unquote, adopt someone?
Yes, well, we felt the Lord calling us through our children. Naturally, the Lord knows that a mother will do anything for her children. So when this was put on our hearts to pray for our children, the women are just responding so well. And so we do pray for our own children. That's how we were called. But then when people know that we're praying, they say, will you pray for mine, children? Will you pray for this? A friend of mine has got problems. So we write these names down. Then after we've given the Lord, presented the Lord our children, we then ask him to bless all the people that have asked us to pray. In fact, one of the big answers to prayers is children coming back to faith. And there doesn't seem to be any other explanation other than the prayer and the Lord touching their hearts, or perhaps removing from them the things that are holding them back. We know of atheists that have become Christians. We've heard of people that have been lukewarm in their faith and gone away. And through mothers' prayers, through their concern for their children, they've come again into a relationship with Jesus and have returned to their faith.
Where would you like to see this go, Veronica?
To be honest, I really take on my role as a secretary. I say the Lord is the boss, I'm his secretary, so I don't have any plans or visions. I just go where he asks me to go. And to be honest, I'm more amazed, I think, than other people at how the Lord is spreading mother's prayers, because it's his work, not mine. What is such a blessing is that during our prayer time, we unite our prayers with the hundreds and thousands of women around the world. And therefore, it's not just two people praying for their children. They're supported in prayer by hundreds and thousands of women. And I like to think, when I'm in bed, women in Australia are praying for my children and my grandchildren. So through all the different time zones, these wonderful prayers are being offered, and we are united with a common thought, Lord, change this world for our children. We trust you.
And a very warm thanks there to Veronica Williams, and the best of luck to her for her growing project. The Mother's Prayers website offers more information about the movement in several languages, including Ukrainian, Russian, Dutch, and Indonesian, besides English, of course. You'll find them at www.mothersprayers.org. And I'm Tracy McClure. Laudator Jesus Christus.